This is News and Views on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back to News and Views. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and it is an issue that probably touches you even if you don't realize it. Did you know that 1.3 million women are physically assaulted by an intimate partner each year in Minnesota? And people who have language and cultural barriers sometimes have an even more difficult time getting the support, getting the help. We're going to explore this issue with my next two guests. Lillian McDonald is the executive director for ECHO Minnesota. That stands for Emergency Community and Health Outreach. ECHO is a nonprofit agency dedicated to providing multimedia informational programming to limited English proficiency families during local or national emergencies. We also have Lolita Yuloa in studio with me. She is the managing attorney for the Victim Services Division, which incorporates Victim, Witness, and the Domestic Abuse Service Center of the Hennepin County Attorney's Office. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And unfortunately, this is an issue that hasn't gone away, isn't going to go away anytime soon. Lillian, let me start with you. Paint a picture for us, just overall, the domestic violence situation in the state of Minnesota.
Well, I think Lolita can give you a precise statistic on domestic violence as a whole, but why this issue, along with some other issues, is particularly challenging for cultures has to do with more than just language barriers. When you are coming here, whether you are an immigrant, refugee, or here for another reason, you are challenged with lots of change all at once, whether it's a home, whether it's school, it's work, and then you add language and cultural shifts, plus generational gaps and more. All of that sort of comes to a head on short order, and as a result, we're seeing some challenges. So the goal of ECHO is to improve and reduce the pressure on some of those challenges by improving the communication, the dialogue, get things going as folks get connected to resources.
Lolita, yeah, expand on that picture for us.
Sure. In Minnesota, we are lucky to live in such a progressive and aggressive state when it comes to their response to domestic violence and sexual assault. And we have been, the state has been nationally recognized and internationally recognized for the work that we do. Having said that, however, we still have challenges every day. In Minnesota, we have 1.3 million women who are physically assaulted. Those are of those that probably have reported. That doesn't take into account many of the women that are isolated in rural areas, those that are in the metro areas that are impacted by their religion, their culture, their communities, their language. So we still have a lot of work to do. The wonderful part of what I have been seeing over the years is a difference in the response from law enforcement, from social service agencies, from our government, and from faith organizations.
Well, I noticed a story in the paper this past week of a woman in St. Paul who outsmarted her boyfriend, according to the headline. And apparently her boyfriend had moved in with her and her children, and he was quite abusive. And this boyfriend wanted to get her to get a restraining order against her former boyfriend. And in the process of going to the court, she had him pay the parking meter so she could write a note to law enforcement that was right there. And this guy got arrested. So this is not always the case where a woman, even after what sounds like the repeated beatings she had suffered, necessarily take matters into their own hands.
And I suspect the key to that, Rashini, is the comfort that comes when cultures come together with organizations, whether it's law enforcement or advocacy groups and others, and begin to trust and build that one relationship at a time.
Now, Lillian, ECHO produces and broadcasts monthly programs on Twin Cities Public Television in multiple languages, reaching the African, Hispanic, and Southeast Asian communities. Are those widely watched and disseminated? I mean, what kind of reach are you getting with those?
In the metro alone, we're getting about 1,400 viewers just in the Twin Cities metro alone on any given program, any given topic.
That's great.
That's an average.
Okay.
We've had more than a million folks statewide watch our work last year alone on the Minnesota channel. So almost 1.5 million watching the programs. And that's just television. We also have it streamed on the website, where we're seeing our YouTube and web use of our programs more and more. And it's important to note they're not just in different languages. This information is also in basic English. And this particular program, because the sensitivity of its topic, is going to be in English language learning classrooms, where we get more use out of the programs and people can learn a little something. We can measure their knowledge and they can get connected to resources. So again, it's about getting the conversation going. This is such a tough topic. People tend to feel isolated with it.
And you're mainly dealing with immigrant communities, but those are not the only communities, right, Lolita? I mean, you've worked in Boston, you've worked here, you're from Ecuador, you've looked at this issue all around the country. It is not just immigrant communities that are dealing with domestic violence.
Absolutely not. It seems to be with our new immigrant and refugee communities here, in particular in Minnesota, there are some particular challenges for those communities that always happens when you have a new culture and community coming in. However, this is a longstanding issue for all communities, all racial classes, all geographic locations, economic situations. It's it crosses all boundaries and barriers, and there's absolutely not enough work being done in all areas.
So what can the regular person do out there? Let's say you're not a victim, and let's say you're not a perpetrator. What can people like that do?
Well, I think we all have a responsibility to keep our community safe, and that is one of the goals for the Hennepin County Attorney's Office. This is why this is such a priority issue for Mike Freeman and the County Attorney's Office in general, and why we have collaborated with ECHO, why we continue to go out in the community to talk about this issue, to try to educate, but also making sure that the services within the County Attorney's Office are appropriate to domestic violence victims. Just a community member, this affects everyone. If you hear the stories of workplace violence, if you hear the stories about neighborhood violence, much of it has to do with domestic violence.
What if you even hear someone screaming at the house next door or across the street?
And I think that's the concern, is that people suddenly become afraid, and so they think maybe we shouldn't get involved. And we're trying to say maybe you should. Because it's the folks that aren't getting involved that that really can make a difference. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean to walk over into the house and become physically involved in
right.
it. But there are resources and places to call, even locally.
Yes. And, you know, the first response always, you hear somebody screaming, you don't hesitate. You call 911. You call the law enforcement. They're the appropriate agency to come in and assess the dangerous situation. But there's also other avenues that community members can use. And one of those is if you think a child is being abused, you can call Child Protection. You can call the school to report to the administrators. You can call social service agencies. Most of the nonprofit agencies for domestic violence victims have holistic services that have to do with neighborhoods, with kids, for the perpetrator, for the victim. And they are wonderful at giving tools and resources and some advice and some support for those community members and family members, especially, who feel so frustrated so many times with seeing it happen in front of them and not being able to really assist them in the way that they think they should.
Right, and help. So back to this woman in St. Paul and the domestic violence case there. I mean, I am just flabbergasted when I read this. According to her, she claims he controlled her money and her vehicle, had taken her house keys away. He beat her and her children more than 100 times. He threatened daily to kill her. And she even had trouble going to work to support herself and her children. I mean, these are stories just right in our neighborhoods. This could be your neighbor. And that's what really strikes me.
Ellen, people think that domestic violence is purely physical, and really it's more than that. It's also emotional. And that's, again, where the gray area comes in. And especially culturally, when you're in a new culture and you're trying to figure out, well, what is the right and the wrong way? But the law is clearly defined, and it's the repetitive patterns. And I think one of the things that's important, an important message to get out, and that is to make a connection to an advocacy group and find out what is okay and not okay based on what you're experiencing.
Exactly. Most of what the advocate agencies can do is to triage what's going on in your particular case, because every case is different. Many women, many victims know they have their own secure sort of safety and security assessment. They know what will be the triggers for the perpetrator. They know how to walk on eggshells. They know if they leave, it might be more dangerous than for them to stay. So many of them are good at they can assess their own dangerousness. What the advocate will do will help them figure out some of the other issues that may impact their reasons for staying or for leaving. Child care, transportation, money issues, housing, all of those things that can impact a woman's decision to leave or to stay. And for us, what I always like to put out there is, you know, we ask all the time, why do women stay in those kind of relationships? Well, as a community, I think we should continue to ask, well, why do abusers abuse?
And does any of what Lolita is saying sound familiar to you, or sound familiar in your family, or to a neighbor? You know, these two ladies can help, whether you want to text us anonymously, give us a call, 651-989-9226, or text me at 81807. These ladies can help. Lolita Uloa is here. Lillian McDonald from Echo Minnesota is here. And we are going to take a real quick break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to News Radio 830 from the Buick Studio, WCCO.
Welcome back to News and Views. Have you ever gone to the Minnesota Orchestra or the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra? Well, the season's in jeopardy, as there are no contracts currently for those orchestras' musicians. They have not been able to come to agreement with management. We'll hear from one of the players of the Minnesota Orchestra coming up in just a bit. But we are talking domestic violence. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. My guests from Echo Minnesota, Lillian McDonald and Lolita Uloa. She is the managing attorney for the Victim Services Division at Hennepin County Attorney's Office. Ladies, domestic violence isn't only a female problem, though. Are men abused?
Absolutely. And you'll see that most of the services, if not all of the services, will provide for family violence victims and for men. However, our experience is parallels the national statistics, which are predominantly that women, over 90%, are victims of domestic violence.
That's what you would assume.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's our experience in our office, too. Mm-hmm. But it's a community issue. It's a family issue. The kids are affected. Kids see and they model behavior. They model abusive behavior. They model good behavior. So it's a situation where we want to make sure that everybody that has problems or is being abused or is being emotionally abused has some recourse and some resources available to them.
Right. We do have to look at this issue. It's not just about women. It's about men. It's about families. Could even be about mental illness, Lillian.
Absolutely. And I think that's where folks don't realize that there are a lot of factors that may bubble up underneath the surface, and then something happens. Something snaps. Something happens. But we don't want to say that if you have a mental illness problem, that can't be treated as well, to help with the cursory issues. Chemical dependency is another situation that often is alongside some of these issues.
Yes, yeah, some of those can be factors, but it doesn't necessarily mean that is what causes domestic violence. Domestic violence is a control issue, and it is a decision that perpetrators make against their victims. And they can be impacted by certain things in their lives, but it is not the sole reason. It is a decision that somebody makes when they assault another person.
Which is a good reason for us to have these conversations, because, again, taboo topics, not talking about it, perpetuates the problem.
Absolutely. And so what if there is a man or a woman out there who feels he or she is a perpetrator? Can they go to your organization and find help?
Yes. All the nonprofit agencies have services that will help with those calls, with those inquiries. We can give them that information. Our center is victim-focused, so if you self-identify as a victim, whether you're a male or a female, we provide services. But there are many agencies that provide services and counseling groups for perpetrators.
We had several cultural organizations partner with us in kind, the Asian Women United of Minnesota, Tubman Domestic Abuse Project, and the Sexual Violence Centers. And with cultures, a lot of times, It's the men who have the conversation about the issue and alongside women so that they can see that it's not just one or the other gender-wise, that it's really a cultural concern.
Absolutely.
Roshini, I just wanted to add that so many of our agencies, the nonprofit agencies in Minnesota, are just incredible because we have so many culturally specific advocacy services. So if you are non-English speaking, if you are from an immigrant community, there are a lot of services with women and men who look just like you providing those services and understand where you're coming from. It's really critical for women to understand and to know that those services are out there for them, the victims.
And you're playing with the heavy hitters on this, both Ramsey County and Hennepin County are taking this very seriously. I understand you have Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman on your show later in October.
We do. End of this month, 21st, 7 p.m. on the Minnesota Channel in English. Spanish follows. And then on the 28th, 7 p.m., Hmong, Lao, and Somali.
So you're covering a lot of ground.
Mm-hmm. We try to.
Are you seeing some improvement? When we do these kind of interviews, they can be somewhat sad, frankly. Is there any hope out there, Lolita?
Yes, there is. I have seen over the last 18 years that I've been doing this work a wonderful change in the way law enforcement responds. Their training is wonderful. The police officer response. They have a lot of experience, a lot of training. They have a focus on domestic violence. So I think the response from law enforcement has been wonderful. In addition to that, the advocacy groups are really taking a holistic view on providing services to domestic violence victims. So it's not just the incident, but there's all sorts of other things, their language, whether they're safe, services around transportation and child support, getting information so that a woman is better prepared, should she stay or should she leave. So absolutely.
Yes,
people want to tell their stories, and
right.
They can tell them on the program, on our website, and on programs like yours, Roshini.
Well, thanks. So how do people find you on the web?
You can find us at echominnesota.org, E-C-H-O, Minnesota spelled out, .org. And again, if you missed the broadcast end of this month, you can also download it and pass it. It'll be available by DVD and also in English language learning classrooms across Minnesota.
So you can go to their website. And as you know, News and Views every week is on podcast, also on our News and Views page. So you can get this, this link with our interview today with these extraordinary women and share with anyone who you think needs this kind of help or if you want to get involved and volunteer. And I'll get those numbers, Lolita, from you off air, and I will be tweeting a couple numbers if you want them for yourself, for anyone in your life, for men and women, that you're there for them.
That's wonderful.
Thank
all
you.
Right.
Thank you. Lillian McDonald from Echo Minnesota and Lolita Uloa. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Perfect.
Okay, excellent. I love Lolita. That's such a great name. She is with the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, Managing Attorney for the Victim Services Division, doing some work that not a lot of people have the patience or really the gut to do. So thanks a lot for doing that for people here in Minnesota.
Gracias, Roshini.
And thanks for joining. On a little lighter topic, is golf a metaphor for life? That's what I want to know. I'm a pretty crappy golfer, so I'm also hoping to get some golf tips. My 220 guest will have some answers. We also are waiting with bated breath or French horn or flute or whatever you do play or care about. We will have one of the French horn players from the Minnesota Orchestra on coming up after the break. Let's find out if our orchestra is good to go for this season. I'm Roshini Rajkumar. You're listening to News and Views. We will be right back.
You're listening to News and Views on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back to News and Views. You know, music is such an important part of your life, don't you think? I mean, think about even that song that we just heard. When was the first time you heard that song? And it's an oldie but a goodie. I love hearing that song. Different songs conjure up different parts parts of your life, different decades, different people even. Hopefully good memories, but every once in a while there's a song that maybe brings up a bad breakup or a bad event in your life. You know, you never know, but that's the power of music. And we heard over the last couple of weeks, various orchestras around the country are in negotiations with their management, including the Minnesota Orchestra and the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. And what we understand is today, talks are resuming for both of those orchestras here in Minnesota. There's no agreement. They went to bed last night with no agreement. The musicians voted down the contract proposal. The musicians seem to not understand why they're being asked to take some huge pay cuts in their salary, dropping. Management has proposed to cut average annual pay from $135,000 to $89,000, which would save them about $5 million in a year. So that is something that is being discussed right now, and we will be talking with one of those musicians to get a deeper look at what is happening, if she was part of those negotiations herself, and why she voted down the latest contract proposal. Ellen Smith is a French horn player with the Minnesota Orchestra. Welcome, Ellen.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for joining us. What can you tell us? You're inside this story.
Yeah. Well, I'm inside. I'm actually not on the negotiating team, but I have been living this story for quite some time now. What I can tell you is that it was unanimous last night. We are all standing firm for world-class music in Minnesota.
And your orchestra really is known for that. It's known for that. Veteran players, you get top-notch international singers and what should we say, other stars who come in just to play with you because you're so good.
It's true, but not just that. I mean, just the fact that I can basically say I work with 95 musical geniuses. The population of our orchestra is incredibly talented, and the richness that it brings to the Twin Cities is really, you couldn't compare it even to any other resource, I believe.
So what's happening, and why do you think this is happening now? It's not even just your orchestra. Chicago and Atlanta had various negotiations. Chicago, it sounded like, settled after a couple days strike.
Yes, and this is probably my personal belief, is that it may look like a time that people basically can take advantage of the situation. And each orchestra is going through something very different. But we know here in Minnesota that our orchestra has the sixth largest endowment of any orchestra in the country. And we are in the top 10.
So what does that mean for people who don't necessarily understand endowments when it comes to an orchestra or funding for orchestras?
Well, the endowment, they're basically gifts that people have given to the orchestra that cannot be used to run the orchestra, but we do use the proceeds of the endowment to run business. And there's a certain amount that they take every year, and the endowment draws numbers that we have been given, the management, very greatly. If you look in past reports, it'll say 6% a year. But if you look in reports now, they're saying 10% a year. And we have repeatedly called for a joint independent analysis of the orchestra's finances because, honestly, we don't understand what their proposal is. Where's
the pushback on that? I've been following this story, and I understand that you just don't even have the numbers as far as what they're pulling or why they're saying they need to do this huge cut in your salaries.
Exactly. We don't have the information we need. And when someone asks me why haven't we made a counterproposal, I basically say, well, we could. We could propose a 50% pay increase and add things like paid parking, studio space, purchase of our instruments, which can range from, you know, $100,000 to $300,000 plus a year, you know, for one instrument. We could say, let's add those to our contract, and then they would say, that's ridiculous. Well, that's how we feel about their proposal. It's ridiculous, and it's not respectful, and it's not fair.
So First of all, I want to break this down a little more. All right. So it's numbers. You know, people look at numbers just like when the teachers went on strike in Chicago and the numbers we were hearing. You know, a lot of Americans are saying that's a pretty good salary, teachers in Chicago. But, you know, if you know teachers are doing a lot more than what that job description or that $114,000 salary would describe. So break it down a little for those of us who either haven't seen the orchestra, have no idea what's going on behind the scenes with you all, or, you know, I'm someone who happens to love the Minnesota Orchestra, love classical music, and don't want to see a lockout, so to speak. You know, just like these different sports teams, we could have a lockout of this orchestra come October.
Yeah. Exactly, and I hope that doesn't happen. Well, I can tell you that what it takes to be a musician, you have to have single-minded dedication. You have to have an intense concentration. You have to have muscle memory. You have to have the ability to sit alone and practice. And this ability has to start when you're young. So the years of training that goes into becoming a professional musician are a big part of it. And what we can say about our musicians here and why we're so proud of our orchestra is that, of course, we have all of those things, but we also have the ability to speak without talking. They speak through their music. For instance, in my horn section, we don't sit there and say, that's too long, that's too short. We listen to each other. And if there's something in the music that is contradictory, we ask, you know, we don't have to say, oh, you're doing that, I'm doing this, let's do it this way. We just look and we go, oh, that says that, what do you think? You know, so we're constantly criticizing each other on a very high level every day. And I don't honestly think that our management realizes the treasure that they have. And I wish for my colleagues, who I respect gratefully. You know, I'm so grateful to work for them, and I respect them so highly. I wish for them a management that treasures them.
And what is the significance, would you say? I mean, let's say we have some listeners out there who haven't heard about what's going on, will never go see the Minnesota Orchestra or the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. Why should this matter to them? I mean, I've already shared, it matters to me. I don't want you guys to get locked out, but I also want there to be some sort of agreed upon resolution that everyone can live with. But what about the rest of the community? Why should they care about a lockout?
Well, I know that the businesses downtown should care. They should really care greatly because, of course, there are many restaurants that have patrons before and after. Of course, musicians live in the Twin Cities, and they use their economic power to buy tickets to the Guthrie, or they go shopping with their kids. They raise their children in this community. Oftentimes, they volunteer and give their time to many worthwhile causes. We have a very large population of musicians who raise money for all kinds of different groups around the Twin Cities.
Ellen, what would you say to the person out there who says, you know, this pay cut they're talking about, Ellen, averaging $135,000 to $89,000? There are a lot of people out there who'd say $89,000 is a lot of money.
That's true. First of all, I mean, it's upsetting to a lot of us that that's the money that they're putting out there, because that's actually not what the proposal is. And if you look on the Star Tribune website, you will actually see our current salary is $109,000, and they're proposing taking it down to $78,000 or something like that. So the numbers that they put out constantly are inaccurate. I want to point that out just as a personal thing. But actually, overall, it doesn't really matter what those numbers are, because for us, it is not just a local comparison. So you want to compare my salary to someone else in the Twin Cities, you can't. It would be like trying to say that the pitcher for the Minnesota Twins shouldn't get that much money. It's That is not a local.
There's a market for all of these things. And just like when this happened in Detroit, they had a horrible 2010-2011 season because a lot of people just went elsewhere, or they didn't want to patronize that orchestra because they didn't feel the caliber was there. So one of the things that I read was is out there is hiring less experienced musicians. What do you and your colleagues, what is your stance on something like that?
Well, the fact is, if the contract comes through, like what they're proposing, people would leave this orchestra in droves. It would decimate the orchestra. We would no longer have the Minnesota Orchestra. It still would be an orchestra, but, you know, it would be totally different. And the numbers just aren't out there for us to hire. For instance, when we had a bass trombone position opening this summer, out of all the candidates who tried to get the job, there were really only two candidates out of the whole group that we could have hired. And those two candidates won't be here if that contract is put up. Plus, we have musicians who have come here from other orchestras that paid more than we would pay. So, of course, they will be leaving immediately.
Right.
You know?
Right. So there are things that and with the construction that's going on and all of that, I mean, this is part of the Minneapolis economy.
Exactly.
And the state economy. So, well, what would it take for to come out of today for you as musicians to say yes to management?
I think the number one thing is that we would expect fair and respectful treatment. And we feel like there has not really been a negotiation, though they insist that there has been one. Their final proposal was their first proposal. We asked them to take that off the table because it was a ridiculous proposal. And that needs to change. They need to treat us respectfully.
Well, you heard it from Ellen Smith, one of the French horn players of the Minnesota Orchestra, in talks right now, those musicians with their management, as well as the musicians at the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, about their future contracts and the future season, which, and does that start, is it scheduled for the middle of October, Ellen?
Yes,
new season?
The first concert's supposed to be October 18th.
Okay. And this was the end. Today is the end of your contract. So essentially by midnight, if there's no deal, you're moving into kind of a lockout position.
That's true.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry that we don't have more or better news to report at this juncture. And I will wish both sides some common sense and good luck as you move throughout the day.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Ellen, for coming on with us. Ellen Smith, French horn player with the Minnesota Orchestra. Well, we've got a lot more show for you. We talked about whether golf is a metaphor for life, and it certainly could be, depending on who you are. We've got that. We've got the first ever U.S. Youth Observer to the UN. She was at the UN General Assembly this past week, first ever to do this, and I'm really excited to share with you where she goes to college. So we've got that and a lot more. We'll take a quick break and be right back with News and Views.
News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Roshini Rajkumar. And while we were at break, we did get a text from what I believe is one of the musicians at the Minnesota Orchestra, who says, "This is our livelihood. Musicians go to college. Have you ever taken music theory?" Well, I will tell you, I did when I played piano, and it is not fun. So hopefully we will get some good news coming out of the negotiations between the musicians and management at both the Minnesota Orchestra and the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. We have a lot more show coming up. We're going to talk golf. We're going to talk about an international organization that's bringing good smiles and good health to kids all over the world. And tonight, if you want to explore more art, turn into Steel Talking with Geraldine Steele, center stage at 9 p.m., all the different shows going on around town. And I'm sure if anyone has an opinion about these negotiations, Geraldine will. You're listening to News and Views. I'm Roshini Rajkumar. We've got a lot more show coming up. We'll be right back.